Hi there, guys. Welcome back to the Rolling in the Deep podcast. I am here today, Adele from Babies on Broadway, with my main gal, Summer, over here. And we have a guest today. So we are going to be starting a little series. We're not exactly sure how many pods will come out of this, but it is going to be navigating parenting through divorce. And today we are really excited to have here Alex Gutnick from Heller and Thyen. And he is going to be kind of walking us through a little bit about some family law things and kind of what you can expect as maybe you're going through those first like really frightening steps of looking maybe into divorce or going through divorce. And I'm going to let Alex introduce himself. So give us a little bit about your background.
Absolutely. Thank you, Adele and Summer, for having me on the podcast. First and foremost, just some background for myself so people understand, you know, how I came to the practice here. I'm originally from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Went to the University of South Dakota, go Coyotes. We don't like South Dakota State, so I will say that. So if you are a South Dakota State fan, sorry.
Did we not tell you we're Badger fans?
Okay, we can live with that.
Okay. I don't got nothing.
So after graduating the University of South Dakota, I went to law school here in St. Paul, originally William Mitchell, became Mitchell Hamlin School of Law, graduated. Then had my first attorney job here in St. Cloud at Central Minnesota Legal Services. So I was a staff attorney. I worked in 9 different counties, worked with financially eligible population for mostly family law, employment law items, as well as criminal expungements. So those are the big areas that we did have there. And then in February of 21, then I decided to make a venture into private practice with Heller and Thyen. It was a great transition time for me. It was really difficult to leave Central Minnesota Legal Services. I love the mission of it, but it was the time of like, hey, you're getting into this, give it a try, and legal services will always be there. I'm always a big proponent for legal services, whether that's a volunteer attorney program to give your time to either litigate cases for them, be a mediator, or provide legal advice clinics. So I always push for them and all our attorneys here to provide that, because we're supposed to provide at least 50 hours of pro bono work is an aspirational goal. I think some of us could do better. Yeah. And now we kind of do a shame campaign. As of 2 years ago, I think the bar or the board, you have to put your hours. Ooh. Now every time you certify yourself.
When you relicense.
Yeah, so you and like they're not going to do anything if it's 0 hours, but it's kind of like, ooh, those are, we need to pump
accountability.
Those up. Yeah, that's so cool. We should be definitely doing that. I've been at Heller and Thyen since February of 21, still practicing family law. I got to expand my scope of services to criminal defense work, and then also a little bit more employment. I've decided to kind of freeze that a little bit now because it's just a little too much is on the platter with the family law and criminal defense portion. But I have that tool and that set of tools for me to use in my family law cases there to assist in saying like, hey, what kind of experiences does your attorney have for other areas of law? And that's the beauty of our practice too. We're not just a family law practice group. We have bankruptcy, personal injury, criminal defense, landlord tenant, and of course our family law group. So we can reach out to different people in our firm and say like, hey, I got a bankruptcy issue. Let's say, you know, sometimes, you know, most marriages tend to dissolve because of finances, right? Yeah. That's like the top three. So if you're looking at, hey, we want to do a joint petition for a bankruptcy, then I have to talk, I can go to Rob Thyen or Steve Heller, my bosses, and go, hey, so like, how does this really parlay into our case? Does it make sense to do a 7 or 13? How does that play in the family law case? So it's really helpful to caucus cases with other attorneys, and we're not on our own island there.
That's helpful. And I think it too, yeah, a ton of people that I come across, and it does end up in maybe potentially having to look at a bankruptcy. Like maybe there was just debt that's, you know, not feasible for each party. So that's good to have that resource for them right there.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to just, you know, demystify like family law, right? We're saying family law. What does that actually mean?
Yeah.
So to break it down, I kind of have a couple different areas we can talk about. Obviously, divorce or dissolution is what we call it there. Paternity, custody, parenting time, child in need of protective services. You could have child support, third-party custody, grandparent visitation rights. Things that are not maybe family law, but we often see would be harassment restraining orders, orders for protections, criminal matters being, you know, you could have a domestic abuse no contact order, a DANCO, part of a criminal proceeding, and advising your client, what can we do and what cannot we do at that point? So those are the areas that we have there. So is there any questions or that you have initially of just hearing that? And what is family law, the big umbrella term to that?
Well, I think too, like It's kind of sad that I'm sitting here and so many of those terms were familiar to me. I'm over here like, oh, yep, yeah, yeah, check, check, mm-hmm. check. So to give a little background, I am a navigating through divorce parent for sure. I have two kiddos, both with the same dad, you know, and I'll just share and be vulnerable here. We were high school sweethearts. We were together in high school. We got married very young. I was 21, actually barely legal to drink. We had my first son at 23 and then my second son, I was 27. But the long story short of it is, you know, my now ex-husband fell off kind of the deep into addiction. And with that being said, our divorce was ugly. It did not go that well. There were dankos. There were, you know, harassment restraining orders. There was a lot of no-shows to court. And it was just a really, really scary time, like financially, future. And I think too that like something, maybe some advice that you could give for something is like, I spent a lot of time like living in my own head of the fear of what was to come. And I think that sometimes just getting that message out there to people that like, if you're even thinking about it, or like you see that writing on the wall, it's probably an okay time to like have a conversation with an attorney, because that part kept me, I think, maybe in it longer than I should have, because I was so fearful of like how the process would work. And it felt so messy. My husband owned a business. I owned a business. You know, he's off the deep end. He's got stuff. I've got stuff. And it just, yeah. So what's your advice for that? Like, when's the right time? When's the right time to call you?
Well, you know, there's never a right time for a divorce. Many people, fantastically, we're in this holiday season, right? So there, we call this the lull. And I just met with a guy who just hired me and he goes, Alex, you know, Christmas is coming around the corner. Should I really start this process? Should I wait for the holiday to go through? The pink clouds, right? This is all going to work. Christmas time, right? And cheer. I go, listen, time isn't going to change your decisions. The data that you have at hand. Do you think by waiting another month or two is going to change that? And he goes, no. And I'm like, there's your answer. So you'll usually see this lull after January 2nd, people start calling, or after February
14th. So that is true, that little uptick after the holiday.
Yep. Or you see an uptick, you know, towards summer because they go, oh, I want to really change the school district. And I go, that conversation should have been had probably in February, not August 1st.
That's good to know. Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at that, I can definitely go over that. August 1st. And you can spend different area, a lot of time in different areas. But I always say this. Our office, you have attorney-client privilege with any law firm, right? I cannot say you, like if your husband called me or your significant other, whoever you may be, right? I can't share that information. Even if they called in and we talk to the significant other, we say we have a conflict and we can't talk with you. Now, obviously, we don't tell them that we've talked with them, but it's inferred through our conflict checking, hey, we've already learned information about the case. You'll have to find a different attorney for that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a free consultation with our office. You know, there's different varieties of them, right? Some attorneys will spend 10 minutes on the phone. Some will spend a half hour. Some will charge you for it.
Yeah.
I usually do a free consultation and I usually do about a half hour myself. I get a little bit more in depth because I need to know how to curate the retainer for the payment. Number two is I want to know your objectives. Can I meet your expectations, right? And my thing is family law is a big gray area. The most deference is with the judge. We're talking about 12 best interest factors. One doesn't weigh more than the other. You know, what would happen with that? And I go, you know, the judge has a pen and a fancy robe that can make orders. I don't. I get to tell your story persuasively. So if you call in, we're going to talk about your finances. If it's a divorce, custody, we talk about finances and the fact of child support. But if you're talking about divorce, right, we want to talk about bank accounts, checking accounts, savings accounts, 401ks, pensions, if you have stocks, bonds, if you have corporation shares, right, we want to get those valuations and start getting your case lined up efficiently and effectively so we have the tools and resources to implement, right? And then, you know, if I have someone who's like, we have no kids, we rent a house, we have little debts, we have $100 in our bank account, I'm not going to charge you $5,000. Do your divorce because the need is not there. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're like, hey, we have three kids, dad's drinking, we're in a bunch of debt, we're in foreclosure, we own two business, you know, you go, okay, we're going to, there's going to be a lot of work on this. And do we have an emergency that requires a temporary motion to be in place right away? That takes time. So we have to curate that retainer to make sense. Or, you know, some people are like, well, can you charge less? And I go, yeah, you're just going to get a bill the next month that says you owe us money.
Right.
So could you clarify from like a payment perspective? I've had a lot of people who have asked, like, there's a lot of advertising that, like, there's some firms that basically say, here, we're going to upfront quote you the entire cost of your experience, pretty much. You know, you will never pay us more. And I'm just so confused kind of by that, to be honest with you. Like, how is that possible? I mean, my experience is like, you just...
A phone call costs money.
Yeah.
I mean, an email costs money. Is valuable. I mean, yeah, an email.
Isn't there a point, you know, like, so seriously, for $3,000, you know, I'm just throwing out a number, but for $3,000, I can basically use you for 10 years and you're never, you know what I mean? Because like, true, in my experience, I got four kids that I'm going to co-parent for a very long time. And I'm going to need a consult at times. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So for retainers, when I'm talking about that, it's payment for legal services in the future. You can do them in a couple different ways. For family law, I don't like doing a flat fee retainer because you never know what comes up, and it's hard to do the scope of that. Some people will go, hey, it's X thousand up to mediation, right? And they get, you know, it's $2,000 to represent you up to mediation. If it doesn't work, then you have to sign a trial retainer for us to, you know, get to that point.
Maybe that's the kick.
So it's a little bit of a kick, and I feel there's a lot of clients who get really put in a hard position because don't get me wrong, don't throw good money at a bad problem. But if you know you have to spend additional money and you're at mediation, that's another quantitative factor to take into place.
It is.
So our firm does a trust billing, right? I have to earn your time at that point. So you're going to see all my descriptive billing there because it's not just going to be email point two, right? It's going to be email sent to opposing counsel. We talked about XYZ. In my time on that particular thing, you'll see also my paralegal's time and anything Mary can do for me. I'm going to have her do it first. She's been a paralegal for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I've been practicing for six. She could be basically an attorney. So we have the efficiency and effectiveness of having that paralegal in place because I don't want to draft all your pleadings for my rate.
Yeah.
I'm going to have her draft it at your rate. And then I review it for maybe 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I go, everything looks good. Bing, bang, boom. We're out. We're signing on DocuSign. We're getting this filed. Because, you know, we're not in the metro, right? We have, you know, I'd say blue-collared, hardworking people here, and they don't have all the money in the world to spend, and nor do I want to. I'll say this when I talk on initial consultations, I say, listen, don't throw good money at a bad problem, and I can't put a price tag on a kid. But I'll tell you this, you can put a price tag on litigation. Also, that money's not going to vacation, education, experience with your kid. It's going straight to the firm, and you're going to get this 8.5 by 11 piece of paper with your final order, and there's probably not that much like yay, like a present, right? There's some finality, there's some closure to it, so there can be some of that, but you're losing out on those other experience with your children to choose to, I hate to say this, but fight during this process.
It's tough, my experience was really different because mine just never showed up for anything. And so it was like this weird, like, I would have to work with my attorney, and we did the best that we thought possible at the time without the other person being involved at all, or like me even really being able to like have any type of communication. He didn't have representation. But like pretty much like the day of the finality of the divorce, he had been, you know, ended up getting arrested. And so they brought him up. So this is his first time, like in this whole process that had been going on a very long time, mind you. And so I remember like us just sitting there, and it was like he knew nothing about anything that had gone on because he didn't show up, you know. And so basically it was like starting the whole thing all over again because the judge really felt like he needed to understand it all. And we were just over there like, yeah, you could have showed up like a year ago. So that was a really interesting experience, I have to say, to just like not have the other party. You know, there was no, but it almost turned into a fight at that moment. Mm-hmm. Like, so there had been nothing before that. But then in that moment, it was just like, well, maybe I don't agree with this. It had been going on for so long. Luckily, the judge was like, let's just wrap this up.
Yeah. So that's a kind of one of my outline questions here is like, hey, what do you do if you receive a legal document? Like, let's say, for example, a summons and petition, and that could be, you know, we'll go just briefly in that. A summons is like a cover letter saying, hey, there's an action here in the state of Minnesota in a district court. It's involving, let's say it's a divorce with children. You have to provide an answer and counter petition initially. That's just a legal document answering the pleadings, just saying, hey, is this paragraph truthful, not truthful? truth in part, not truthful in part, or I don't have sufficient information. So that's the first part. The counter petition is essentially the same, just listing out the facts of the case, right? When were you married? When did you separate? Do we have children? Do we have, you know, finances or obligations? And laying that all out, and then finally saying, hey, this is in my golden world, if this came down to me, this is what I would want to occur for these issues about custody, parenting time, and the distribution of the marital estate. So what many people will do, they'll get it, and they won't talk to an attorney. And you go, well, you have this timeline to do now. You know, usually professional courtesy is like, hey, if you hire us, I can talk to the other attorney, get an extension. But let's not try to buy the time either. Let's just get in front of the ball, get this going so we can make it as smooth and efficient as possible for everyone a part of this process. With that, too, you have motions. Motions are more important. I have many people who will call me 2 days before a motion hearing. And I'm like, and you want me to do what? Your response was due 5 days ago, so you're already within the notice period. So the judge could just put a gag order on you. You should just show up with a sock in your mouth and not even say anything, because they're gonna. You have no affidavit in front of us. You have no exhibit in front of us. You have no motion or relief that you're requesting of us. So the judge can just basically go, well, we're gonna order exactly what you want, and you're not gonna get anything.
And nothing was responded.
Because nothing was responded to. So it's really important if you get motion paperwork, or if you get an emergency motion, there's already been an order signed to say, hey, yeah, we need the responsive motion in here right away so we can respond to this, because there usually be an additional hearing thereafter.
What would justify an emergency motion?
Yes. Yeah, so it depends. That's a law professor answer, and it's a judge question. I've had cases where, you know, you file them out. So emergency usually is endangerment to a child. That could be physical, emotional abuse, or emotional development. There, mostly we're seeing it under, you know, there's a crime that happened or domestic violence happened in the household, or, you know, a parent is refusing to return the child and we can't find the parent. And I've had those, and those are very difficult cases to handle with. And usually officers can be helpful, but it may not be top priority either. And that's unfortunate for my client. But, you know, I trust our law enforcement, you know, to put the effort in and do all that. So that's not a slight at our law enforcement, but it may not be a priority.
Yeah, there's a lot going on always. Yep.
So, and when you file that, usually the judge has a lot of deference, again, saying, you know, I had one where the cops were involved, alcohol, there was a gun, the kid was in the house, the sheriff showed up, the whole thing, we got the kid back, and, you know, a judge said, not an emergency, set it for just a regular temporary motion date. And I said, well, they still have parenting time, and like, we don't want to exchange for that further parenting time. And judge is like, I'll kick it out. And I don't have control, right? I'm not the judge. I can persuasively tell your story and try to make sure the judge understands it as best they can. But you got to remember, they don't know you. They don't know the other parent, and they especially don't know your children. And they have so much weight during your case.
I mean, that just reminds me of that case out in Washington. I always watch my little crime shows on it, and it comes up all the time. But like, basically it was like that husband and wife, and then their two kids, and then the wife went missing. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
No, then, I don't myself.
And then during a custodial visit that was actually supervised, the supervisor went out to her car to get something, and basically the guy locked the door and blew up the house with him and the kids in. After the grandparents had been fighting for him not even to have supervised visitation. Like, the whole thing was just absolutely crazy, but it just like reminds me of that. Like, things can go so wrong and sideways.
So fast.
Yeah, and
so
they can go wrong and sideways in the middle of a case, and I've dealt with that, especially with mental health or chemical use.
100%.
I tell my clients this all the time. I say, listen, I'm the counselor of the law. I am not the counselor of the head or heart.
Yeah.
I can't do that. Yeah. I don't have the...
What a good saying.
I don't have the credentialing behind that. And also, your therapist is cheaper than me.
Yeah.
You can do a lot more work, too. So I don't have it as any taboo. And that is one of those considerations that we look at as a best interest factor, is the mental health and physical health of each parent. I've represented addicts. I've represented people with significant mental health concerns. And they go, well, what should I do? Should I just give up the farm? And I go, no. If you are following your treatment plan, you're following your prescription plan,
yes,
you're going to be fine. Now, you're not going to be fine if you say, well, I don't want to take these drugs anymore, I don't want to go to therapy anymore, and you're being you know, it could be sometimes court ordered too,
yep,
to do that. And I go, that's where you start to get off the rails a bit, and that's not going to help your case out. So I've had, you know, and then with, especially with addiction, you know, I say honesty is the best policy. You know, if you're going to say and just hide in a room and, you know, drink, or, you know, do whatever drug you put in there, you're going to have problems in the future at some point.
Yeah, for sure.
So this episode with Alex was running a bit long, and so we are going to do a part 2 follow-up, which will be out next week.